Chapter 52. My God! They've fired a missile at the Narwhal! Captain Birch cried out as he watched the Coast Guard ship disappear in a cloud of smoke and fire 2 miles ahead of the Deep Endeavor. Delgado immediately attempted to raise the Narwhal on the marine radio as the others peered out the bridge window. Summer grabbed a pair of high-power binoculars, but there was little to be seen of the Narwhal. Its smoking remains obscured by a thick veil of smoke. Looking past the smoke, she scanned the platform and the adjacent support ship, which she studied for a long while. There's no response, Delgado said quietly, after repeated attempts to contact the Coast Guard vessel were met with silence. There may be survivors in the water, Ames stuttered, stunned at the sudden demise of a boat and crew he knew well. I can't dare move any closer, Captain Birch replied with angst. We are completely unarmed, and they may well be aiming their next missile at us as we speak. Birch then turned and ordered his helmsmen to stop engines and hold their present position. Delgado spoke to Ames. The captain is right. We'll call for help, but we can't endanger our crew. We don't even know who or what we are up against. It's Kang's men, Summer said, handing the binoculars to her brother. You're sure? Ames asked. She nodded silently with a shiver as Dirk surveyed the vessels. She's right, he said slowly. The support ship. It's the same vessel that sank the Sea Rover. She's even flying a Japanese flag. They've painted and reconfigured her, but I'll bet my next paycheck it's the same ship. But why are they standing off here with the platform? Ames added, a mask of confusion crossing his face. There can only be one reason. They are preparing to launch a strike with the sea launch rocket. A subdued silence fell across the bridge as the gravity of the situation sunk in. A disbelieving Ames finally broke the hushed confines. But the Narwhal? We've got to see if anyone's alive. Ames, you need to get some help out here and now, Dirk replied brusquely. I'll go see if there are any survivors. Delgado looked at Dirk with a furrowed brow. But we don't dare bring the Deep Endeavor any closer, he cautioned. I don't intend to, Dirk replied without explanation as he quickly exited the bridge. Tongju gazed down from the Odyssey's bridge at the smoldering debris of the Narwhal and stared quietly. There was no choice but for the Koguryo to act against the Coast Guard vessel. It was what he had ordered Kim to do. But they were positioned far enough offshore that they should never have been detected in the first place. He knew now that it was the encounter with the blimp that had raised suspicions. Silently, he cursed the Ukrainian engineers for moving the launch site closer to shore, neglecting to consider that the final decision had been his. Pacing the Odyssey's bridge anxiously, he noted the launch countdown clock read 1 hour and 10 minutes to go. A radio call from the Koguryo crackled through the air, breaking his thoughts. This is Lee. We destroyed the enemy vessel, as you directed. There is another vessel standing off 2,000 meters. Do you wish us to destroy her also? Is she another military vessel? Tongju asked, peering out the bridge towards the distant ship. Negative. Believed to be a research vessel. No. Save your armament. We may need it later. As you wish. Ling reports that his launch team is securely aboard the Koguryo. Are you ready to evacuate the platform? Yes. Send the tender back to the platform. My remaining team will be ready to evacuate shortly. Out. Tongju hung up the radio transmitter, then turned to a commando standing at the rear of the bridge. Transfer the sea launch prisoners in small groups to the launch vehicle hangar and lock them in the storage bay located inside. Then assemble the assault team for transport back to the Koguryo. You do not fear that the platform crew may survive the launch inside the hangar? The commando asked. The exhaust gases will likely kill them. I do not care whether they live or die, just as long as they are unable to interfere with the launch. The commando nodded, then slipped out the rear of the bridge. Tongju slowly walked across the pilot house, carefully examining the array of marine electronics built into the lower forward bulkhead. Finding a panel that contained the manual override switches to the automated controls, he pulled out a combat knife and jammed the blade into a side seam and pried open the cover. Grasping the mass of wires inside, he yanked the serrated edge of his knife across and through the bundle, rendering the switches useless. Continuing his trek through the bridge, he gathered up a half dozen keyboards attached to various navigational and positioning computers and tossed them through an open window, watching patiently as they splashed into the ocean below. A trio of laptop computers quickly followed the long plunge to a watery demise. For good measure, he pulled out his Glock and fired several rounds into an assortment of computer and navigation monitors positioned about the bridge. As Ling had been ordered to do with the launch control computers in the hangar, Tongju disabled the navigation computers in the pilot house, destroying any possibility of last-minute intervention. With less than an hour till liftoff, all control of the platform and the rocket was in the hands of the Koguryo, and there it would remain.
"Let me go with you," Summers said. "You know that I can pilot anything under the sea."
"It's just a two-seater, and Jack is the only one with experience in this thing."
"It's better that he and I go," Dirk replied, nodding towards Dahlgren as he prepared the deep probe submersible for launching. Grabbing his sister's hand, he looked deeply into her pearl gray eyes. "Get a hold of Dad and tell him what happened. Tell him we need help right away." Giving his sister a quick embrace, he added quietly, "Make sure Birch keeps the Endeavor in a safe position, even if something happens to us."
"Be careful," she said as he quickly climbed up and into the submersible, sealing the hatch behind him. Squirming into the pilot seat beside Dahlgren, he saw that the submersible was fully powered up and ready to go.
30 knots? Dirk asked with skepticism.
"That's what the owner's manual states," Jack Dahlgren replied, then turned and gave a thumbs-up signal through the viewport window. On the stern of the Deep Endeavor, a crane operator nodded in reply and lifted the bright red submersible off the ship's deck and over the side, dropping it hurriedly into the ocean. The two men caught a quick glimpse of Summer waving to them on the deck before they were engulfed in the green water. With the Numa ship's bow pointed towards the platform, the submersible was effectively blocked from view by the Deep Endeavor's superstructure, and they were deployed without being seen. A diver in the water released the cable hook, then gave a rap on the side to signal they were free.
"Let's see what she'll deliver," Dirk said, activating the 6 thrusters and pushing the throttles to their stops. The cigar-shaped submarine surged rather than leapt forward amidst a whine of electric motors and rushing water. Dirk adjusted a pair of diving planes slightly until they were at a submerged depth of 20 feet, then followed a compass-directed path towards the wreck of the Narwhal. Through his hands, the ride felt like driving a vacuum cleaner. The submersible bobbed and weaved through the current and maneuvered like they were in a bowl of molasses. But with the buzzing of the thrusters in his ears, there was no denying she was a speed demon. Even without a relative speed gauge inside the submersible, Dirk could tell from the water rushing past the viewport that they were moving at a rapid clip.
"I told you she was a thoroughbred,"
Dahlgren grinned as he monitored an elapsed time clock on the console. Turning serious, he added, "We should be approaching Narwhal's position in about 60 seconds. Dirk gradually eased off the throttles a minute later, throwing the motors into idle as the Badger's forward momentum waned. Floating to the surface, Dahlgren adjusted the ballast tanks to keep them low in the water in order to remain as covert as possible. With his expert touch, the submersible just barely broke the surface, showing less than a foot of its topside surfaces above the water. A few yards in front of them, they could see the demolished hull of the smoldering Narwhal, her stern raised high in the air at an awkward angle. Dirk and Dahlgren barely had a chance to gaze at the hulk before her stern tipped upwards even higher, then the entire remnant slipped quietly under the waves. Scattered about was a handful of floating debris, some smoldering, but none larger than a doormat. Dirk guided the Badger in a small circle around the wreckage, but there was no sign of life in the water. Dahlgren solemnly radioed Ames on the Deep Endeavor and reported that all appeared lost in the explosion. Captain Birch asks that we return to the Deep Endeavor at once, Dahlgren added. Dirk acted as if he didn't hear the comment and guided the submersible closer to the platform. From their vantage point low in the water, there was little on the platform deck they could see beyond the top half of the Zenit and the upper portion of the hangar. But suddenly he halted the Badger and pointed a finger past the rocket. Look, up there. Dahlgren peered past the rocket, but just saw the roof of the hangar and an empty helipad. Squinting harder, he gazed down slightly. Then it struck him. The large digital launch clock that read 52 minutes. That thing is going to fire off in less than an hour, he exclaimed, watching the seconds tick down lower. We've got to stop it, Dirk said, a tinge of anger in his voice. We'll have to get aboard and quick. Though I don't know about you, partner, but I don't know a thing about missiles or platform launches. Can't be anything more than a little rocket science, Dirk replied with a grimace, then jammed the submersible's throttles forward, surging the Badger towards the platform.